Hello, and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And, wow, we're here to talk Liège-Bastogne-Liège, La Doyenne. It's an old one. It's the last hurrah of the spring classic season. It's a lumpy race. It's the grand finale of the Ardennes Classics. It's a race that I tend to enjoy. I don't know. What do you make of Liège?
I really like Liège. I like its finish in particular. We'll talk about it later when we talk about the course. But it finishes up a hill, but not quite on the top of the hill. So, you know, there's a section of probably 300 meters after a corner. People have fallen down on the corner in the past, which is a little nerve-wracking. But you get is there are guys who can survive and win it in a sprint, like Simon Gerrans. Or you got guys like way back in 2003, Tyler Hamilton is not, you know, he can get over the climbs, but he is not a classics racer by any means, but managed to take a group of classics racers who are all looking at themselves and kind of catch them when they weren't paying attention and hold that to the finish line. So you have a really wide variety of people who can win this, provided they can race a bicycle hard for 253 kilometers, which is not an easy thing to do. They monkeyed around with the course this year, and I don't really know if I like it. I liked the old course, but it's cool to see, you know, people willing to play with the route. I think that's always a good thing. I think the leaving room for experimentation will inevitably benefit the race, even if in the short term some of the permutations of climbs are stupid.
You know, despite this being such an old race, no single climb, no single feature here has quite the same cachet of any one major feature in Flanders, the Merv on Gerritsbergen being what I'm thinking of, or one of the really hard cobbled sections at Roubaix. Like if they just took the Ehrenberg out, that would be a huge deal. I don't feel like that's quite the case with Liège. I mean, they made changes to this course and there was no huge furor over it.
There should have been, but yeah, you know, you're right. There wasn't.
I think it is just something about this race. I don't know if it's that it's in Wallonia, that maybe the slightly less cycling mad part of Belgium. I'm not sure what it is. It doesn't have quite the same level of excitement about this race that you get with the Tour of Flanders, with Paris-Roubaix, but it is a monument. It is a huge deal, and it does usually end up being a race that's hard-earned because it's a long, very hilly race. This is definitely a classic. I mean, it has all the ingredients of a classic, particularly because it's old. I mean, that's kind of what the word classic means, right? It's been around for a long time. It has a lot of history. It's been around since 1892, and since then it's really developed into one of the premier opportunities for climbers to take a one day victory in the sport. You think of classics specialists, and that doesn't usually bring to mind the kind of guys, I would say, who win this race. When you think of classic specialists, I think when people throw that term around, they're generally talking more about the Tom Bonin body type, the Fabian Cancellara body type. But this race, along with Il Lombardia, it's an opportunity for Grand Tour winners to take a huge one-day victory. And that's actually what we've seen a couple times in the last few years. Last year's winner, for instance, is a former Grand Tour winner. Alejandro Valverde has won Liège three times. He is, of course, a Grand Tour winner. He won the Vuelta. Alexander Vinokourov has won Liège. He won the Vuelta. It's definitely a race that really rewards being good at climbing. And for me, that makes it really exciting to watch, because there just aren't that many opportunities, I would say, for the really great climbers to show off their skills in one-day races. That's one of the reasons I really like to watch this race.
And I think it's important to kind of point out that you have to be able to climb, but it is not necessarily a test of climbing ability. It's definitely has the things that make you good at one day racing make you good at Liège, but you've got to be able to get over climbs. But it's not like something where it's not like Mont Ventoux, where you just go really hard and you go harder than everyone else, and then you're the first person at the top and you gain enough time to win the Tour de France. It's like, you know, you pace your efforts on the climb. You decide what attacks you can follow, what attacks you have to follow, what attacks you're going to let go. You know, you got to be like, you know, I could push the pace here, but I'm going to dump three teammates. You know, do I want to try and keep them around? Going to try to keep things calm until later in the race. There's a lot of, it is cool. I think you're exactly right to have that one day experience where climbing ability is a factor without duplicating what the Grand Tours do.
On that note, did you see that Chris Froome is on the start list this year? I don't think I'm really taking too much risk here by saying he's probably not going to win on Sunday.
He could factor, though. I mean, he's a guy like Chris Froome attacks with 30K to go in this race. You can't be like, well, he's never won.
You definitely can't. But I think it just kind of points to what you were saying in terms of having the one-day abilities, having the classics racing experience. That does come in handy here. This is not just a test of pure climbing ability, or else Chris Froome might actually win. It requires having the ability to do this kind of race. And that's why you see guys like Valverde or Simon Gerrans, who is also a winner at Milano-San Remo. That's the kind of rider who does well here. They can climb well, but they also know what they're doing in a one-day race. So that makes this, I think, a great race to kind of close out the Spring Classics, because this really is the last of the Spring Classics before we get into, I guess you could call it, stage racing season with the Grand Tours and the one-week races that lead into the Grand Tours. That's all around the corner. First, we got
to
get
this is a bridge to the Grand Tour season.
I think that's a fair point, because it really does start to put those skill sets on display, that the climbers can do this sort of one day race where they do get to shine, and then they dominate, I would say, for the next 3 months, because we got to watch the Giro and the Tour. That's all coming up. So we've already gotten into it a little bit about how this is a climber friendly race. Let's talk route. Liège-Bastogne-Liège is 253 kilometers in Belgium's Wallonia region, the French-speaking part of Belgium. They go from Liège to Bastogne to Aon, which is a different town than Liège. It's close. And along the way, they hit up 10, officially 10 climbs, and then there's an uphill finish at the end.
Officially.
Yeah, there are some rollers in here that don't really get counted.
And the climb at the end.
Yeah, exactly. 1.4K
of 5% grade that they don't add to the list.
And it does tend to be important, that last climb.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, the climbs. I mean, yeah, the French... I think the ASO in particular likes to classify things, thus the, you know, categories on long climbs, the stars for the cobbled sections. What is interesting is that most of the climbs in Liège are actually pretty distinctive if you really want to find things to look for. The Côte de Stocco is one that they unfortunately cut, but it was very forested. It had kind of a nice open pine forest where you're in the trees, but you have space. There's a little monument to Eddie Merckx on the top of it. But that's not in the race this year. You know, there are other courses, like, they're not all scenic. One of the climbs, I want to say it's Haute Levée, but I'm not sure. It's kind of like a dual carriage. It's like a highway. It's like a big, wide, open road. But you also have things like the Côte de Saint-Roch, which is just like super narrow little road stuck between houses, very scenic as the whole peloton plods along it because it's so early in the race that no one would ever use it for an attack. But when the race really starts is La Redoute. It's famous because it's in an open field, so anybody with a camper van can come and park it on the side of the road and get drunk and write, you know, their favorites' names. Probably not going to see Phil written all over the road this year. As
I bet
we
we'll
normally
still
do.
See it. I mean, it's going to be there.
Yeah, it's true. It will be there, but Phil will not. Yeah, it is potentially a launching point for a race-winning attack, but it hasn't been since the late 90s. Frank Vandenbroek famously attacked there after saying he was going to attack there, which is about as close as you can come in cycling to pointing at the left field fence. After that, we have the Côte de la Roche au Faucon, which is another kind of, it's steep. It's in the woods, though. It's actually, apparently, there's some pretty good mountain biking there. This is what I've seen in YouTube videos. But really, the climb that really defines this race for me is the Côte de Saint-Nicolas. It's an urban climb. It's very much, I always say it reminds me of kind of old mill towns in New England. You've got houses very close to the road, a very narrow sidewalk, and just steep climbs working their ways out of river valleys. They're always lined with people. And it's just good bike racing. Like you go around a corner and you can't see anymore because there's buildings in the way. So you don't really know what's a no hope flyer and what is a race winning attack until you come around the bend and you kind of see back down. It's very cool. I love it. I think they should do some races in those old New England mill towns of this caliber, but that's neither here nor there. And then finally, the Côte de la Rue Nanio. Am I saying that correctly? I don't know. It's a new climb they added this year. It is nominally cobbled. They're cobbles that look like someone was actually trying to make a road, so they're fairly smooth, but it's still a bunch of rocks stuck together, so it's obviously not pavement smooth. It is only 600 meters long, and it's 10.5%, which is steep, but not breathtakingly steep. If this were Flanders, this could be a climb that would break up the race. I don't know if it would happen here. It is very close to the end. It's only 3K from the end, but it's also significantly smaller in terms of elevation than the final climb into Ans, which does not, for some reason, count as a climb. That's, for the record, 1.4 kilometers at 5%, including the corner and flat part at the top.
Which is a dangerous corner if you're Dan Martin.
It is a dangerous
corner. Who knows this year? Yeah.
That is one of the weirder things I've ever seen in bike racing, was Dan Martin famously crashing on that corner for no apparent reason. One of my favorite moments was at the Tour of Lombardy. Was it that year? He won, but the Eurosport, the pause in the Eurosport team's commentary as he came into that final bend off a downhill was just, I mean, it's like 2.5 seconds long. Normally at a period of the race where they can't shut up, especially because Dan Martin is looking like he's going to win. Yeah, I mean, I love it. I really like how it kind of goes from these somewhat idyllic country settings, roads that you see and you're thinking, man, I want to bike that, to into a grimy, beat up, working class city. I say grimy and beat up with all the affection in the world, too. It's just very cool to see these guys kind of come into that finish, especially if it's moist or rainy. You get road grit, they're all grimy, they're tired, and there's this beaten up town with all these people out on the sidewalk screaming for them. It's very cool.
Yeah, Liège definitely has its own unique character. I think you could see images from a race like Roubaix and you just kind of know it's Roubaix. I think the same is true for Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And in many cases, it is that kind of grimy working town look to it. But it has its very own character, and that's probably why it's known as La Doyenne, the old lady, the grand dame of the classics, really. So we've talked about the route. Let's talk about the start list. All right, the Liège-Bastogne-Liège start list, a number of riders here who are, I think, reasonably strong contenders, but I'm going to start with the defending champion, the three-time winner, Alejandro Valverde, fresh off his fourth career La Flèche Wallonne victory. He looks as strong as ever, despite being 35 years old. And one thing that I think really is going to help him at Liège that I don't think made as big a difference at La Flèche Wallonne, although it certainly played a role, is just how strong this Movistar squad is. I think at La Flèche Wallonne, you need a strong team just to keep things under control until the final climb. But then on the Mur de Huy, it's kind of every man for himself. You're not really getting a whole lot of aero benefit going up a climb that steep. Liège-Bastogne-Liège, though, because of the number of tough climbs towards the finish, and I think they're going to see a lot of attacks on them, it's going to be important to have a strong team to try to keep everything together as long as possible for a guy like Alejandro Valverde, who can win in a sprint. And that's how he does so often win races, is at the very, very end. He's just got this powerful kick and a great killer instinct. And because he's got Danny Moreno here, who's a guy who has done well at Liège on his own in the past, and just a host of other strong riders as well.
Giovanni Visconti, no slouch.
Exactly. Yanni Zagira, Carlos Betancourt, who it's hard to say how he's doing in terms of form, but in terms of peak ability, Carlos Betancourt is a rider who is made for this kind of race. So,
see, I was going to say it's always easy to tell where he is in terms of form just by how tightly his jersey fits around the middle.
Well, he did look okay at La Flèche Wallonne, actually. Anyway, I think that Movistar is really strong here. That's going to be really good news for Valverde, who has kind of made a career out of waiting until the end of the race to do his thing and doing quite well when he does it. And I think he's got a good chance of coming away with a fourth career Liège-Bastogne-Liège victory on Sunday.
I don't know if he's as strong as he's ever been. I remember peak Valverde back in the aughts, and he's definitely not that strong anymore, which I'm kind of happy about. a lot of people are like, oh, I can't believe Valverde is still winning. Everything is so bad. And I'm like, yeah, he's not winning like he used to win.
I mean, he's not winning Grand Tours, but at the same time, he's at least in the stage by stage in the one day racing world. I don't know that he's ever done as well as he's done the last two or three years. He's looked really strong these last couple of years. He won San Sebastian 2014. He's won three of his four career La Flèche Wallonne races in the last 3 years. That's pretty strong, even if he's probably never going to win another Grand Tour. I think at least in the one day world, he's still got a lot. He's still got a lot in the tank, despite being, wow, he turns 36 actually in just 4 days. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll give you that. Speaking of the one day world, Eddix Quickstep, everyone's favorite, not quite dominant, but still strong Hilly Classics team, because those cobbles just weren't working out. They're back with Dan Martin, the 2013 winner and almost 2014 winner, maybe, depending on whether you think Gerrans would have caught up with him. And also Julian Alaphilippe, who was very frustrated to lose to Valverde, but has a few more years to figure out that climb as well as Valverde has. And they've got Peter Vekoč, too, who was, he won Brabant's Appeal a little. I think a lot of teams may be coming into this race after Amstel thinking, we should have done better than we did at Amstel, with the obvious exception of Wanty Groupe Gobert. Dan Martin was right where he wanted to be at the finale of this race 2 and 3 years ago. Last year, we kind of saw the bad Dan. He also had some trouble with crashes, but a guy who, if he's on form, he has 800 to 600 meters that like no one else in the peloton has. He can just go hard and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
He can run kind of hot and cold. I think when he's hot though, he's really shown that he's on another level, as you kind of point out. So it kind of depends. If he's feeling good, he'll probably be right up there at the end of the race. If he's not feeling good, we might not see him at all. But Eddix does have a second option that I don't think Cannondale had when he was with Cannondale. And Julian Alaphilippe is just a really exciting rider for them to have right now. He's so young, and he's already been on the podium in this race and in La Flèche Wallonne now twice. So I think Eddix can be pretty excited about their variety of options going into this race. We've talked a little bit about former podium finishers. Simon Gerrans won Liège-Bastogne-Liège in 2014. He's a guy who I think is going to be at his limit. I think he's always at his limit at Liège-Bastogne-Liège in terms of the climbs here. He doesn't tend to race La Flèche Wallonne. He didn't race this week at La Flèche Wallonne because it's too steep for him. I think it's just not really his kind of climb. But Liège is a little closer to his wheelhouse, and if he can be there at the finish, he's got a finishing kick that, of the guys on the start list, I mean, I think it's unrivaled. So if he can hold on to the end, and he does have a strong Orica Green Edge team around him, he'll be definitely among the top favorites to try to come away with another victory here.
Yeah, he's got a strong team around him and only him, which I think was a big problem. I shouldn't say a big problem. Like, Orica Green Edge really, they pretty much owned they owned between 30K and 1K to go at Amstel last weekend. And then just, they couldn't really sort out whether Gerrans or Matthews was going to be the guy. I feel like, certainly if Gerrans had been working for Matthews, who managed to finish fifth, they probably could have won the race. It's good to see them with one leader. They've got a great supporting cast. Daryl Impey and Michael Albassini were both tremendous last weekend. There are two Yateses. I think the peloton will really struggle to even tell them apart because, I mean, come on, they're like the same dude.
I do think when you have a team like Lotto Soudal, for instance, which often has a lot of different options, guys who need to go on the attack, I think it's okay to share leadership as long as everybody's just firing with every opportunity they get.
As long as everyone has a different role to play, like they can work off each other.
Right, yeah. Or as long as they're all getting into different attacks. With a team like Orica Green Edge, you have two guys who basically rely on the race coming down to a small group finish. I mean, that's how Gerrans or Matthews are going to win. If both of them are going to wait till the finish to try to get into a move, you're probably just wasting your chances. I don't think it's the right way to play it.
Another kind of disappointment-ish from Amstel, Joaquin Rodriguez. We saw him early in the race from Katusha sitting on his butt because he fell. They got him back into the race, but he really didn't factor in the finale. He was not really a major player in Flèche Wallonne, was he?
He kind of just fell off. I mean, he was right up there with about 600 meters to go, and it looked like he was going to contest, and then he just totally disappeared. He tumbled way out of the top 10. He was leading the race for a hot second there on the climb, And then it just disappeared.
Yeah, he may, the window might be closed for him in terms of winning races, at least one day, where you really have to have, you need fast legs. You need to go with the group. You need to make splits. You need to do these things. And, maybe he doesn't have that anymore. I'm kind of hoping not. I'd really like to see him get, the big one day win.
Particularly this one. This has been an elusive race for him. He has always wanted to win Liège. He's come so close in the past, and it just hasn't quite worked out. So, yeah, I agree. I would love to see him pull it off before the career is over. But he's 36. He turns 37 in a couple of weeks, and it just isn't looking like it's there for him this season. Although, if he's going to turn it on for any one race, it's probably going to be this one. Speaking of riders who've been trying to win this race for a long time, Vincenzo Nibali has also come very close in the past. He finally won his first big one-day race last year at Il Lombardia. Well, unless you count the GP West France, which he won in 06. He finally won his first big one-day race last year at Il Lombardia.
Won that in 06? That's crazy.
That's how long he's been around.
Wow.
But he's still only 31. In Lombardia, I really think he showed exactly the kind of skill set that it takes to win this race as well, which is the ability to obviously to climb well, but to time your attack. If you're not going to win in a sprint, and Vincenzo Nibali is not going to win in a sprint, you need to know when to go and how to go. And few riders can climb and descend and time everything perfectly as well as Vincenzo Nibali. So he's definitely a rider to watch. He's coming from the Giro del Trentino, which is sort of an interesting move. A lot of the guys here have been racing at either Amstel or Flèche or both. He's going to be coming from Italy, but that hasn't stopped Romain Bardet and Domenico Pozzovivo have both done this in the past as well, and they've done pretty well here at Liège just after Trentino. So I don't think that's too much of a... I don't think that's going to be too big of a deal for Nibali. So I do think he's in with a chance here at finally taking a Liège win, which has proven elusive for him in the past.
I do kind of wonder if the added climb at the end will be a help for him or a hindrance, because he looked like he was going to win in 2012 and kind of ran out of steam and got overhauled at the end of the race. And I would hate to see that happen again.
I do think any extra climbs are good for him, because I think it makes the race a little harder to control. And as you pointed out, I doubt that climb is going to totally blow everything apart. But anything that makes it more difficult for this to come down to a sprint, I think works in Nibali's favor. Might also work in the favor of Lotto Soudal.
Oh, nice. Good. Thank you. Set up.
How about that transition, huh?
Nicely done. Lotto Soudal, really kind of the hero team from last weekend. One of the few people willing to make that effort after the penultimate and final climb of the Kalberg, most notably with Tim Wellens. The guy actually put on a lot of time. There's a short, flat stretch with a crosswind, and he opened up about 17 seconds. It wasn't nearly enough to stay away, but also, like, he was able to keep with the leaders all the way to the finish line in that sprint. He's a guy who loves to attack. We saw him on the move at Flèche Wallonne. And here, with these added climbs towards the end, I feel like he's one of the people who could benefit most. Even though he's not known as a climber, he is known as a guy who will attack anything in the last 20K of a race. I think actually for Martin's, the year Martin won Lombardia, Wellens was the guy who really set off the first of those attacks, kind of heading into the city at the end of that race.
And Lotto does have a couple of other options. Yeli Vandendere tends to do well in these races, and Tony Gallopin's a very fast finisher. So I think they can plan accordingly. Maybe send Vandendere early and send Tim Wellens when he wants to go. And if everything does come back together, they also have an option for that in Tony Gallopin, who has won Classica San Sebastian and plenty of stages as well on this kind of profile. So definitely a diverse team with a variety of options.
Last weekend, we saw Team Sky really kind of put all their eggs in the Michał Kwiatkowski basket, and he promptly dropped it on the penultimate ascent of the Kalberg, leaving them with what appeared to be no sensible plan whatsoever. So I'm wondering if they might be a little more diversified this weekend. As we mentioned earlier, they have Chris Froome, who certainly has the pedigree to do well at this race, if not win it, at least shake it up. Ben Swift is a guy who really follows that Simon Gerrans mold of a guy who can kind of get over climbs, but also has a pretty good kick. And then Wout Poels, who is kind of, I've always viewed him as like this incredibly versatile teammate. He can kind of lead you up the climb. He can control a group. He can rip the glasses off a spectator and throw them away. because they're
just in case that's what you need.
Just in case that's what you need, he can provide it. A very versatile guy and did quite well at Flesh Wallone. I'm not necessarily a guy who is a likely winner, but definitely someone with the ability to shake up the race or not shake up the race and just protect his team leader.
We had talked a bit about Sergio Henao last week as a contender for Flesh Wallone. And just in case you haven't heard the news, he will not be at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Sky has pulled him from racing because the UCI is looking into his biological passport. So,
like, again.
Again, which has happened to him in the past, although he seemingly cleared himself in the past. So keep an eye out for more news on that one. Rui Costa is a rider, I think, with a shot here if he can make this a hard enough race, because I think he's a quick finisher, but I do think he is better off in a very small sprint. He has shown in the past, with two stage wins, a couple of Tours de France ago, that he does have a great sense of when he can attack and how to time his move. I think the climb added here at the finish really does help Rui Costa, because he's a guy who can take advantage of that kind of thing. He's done well in the past. He's been on the podium in this race before, and he has looked strong so far, even though he hasn't quite pulled off a big result yet in the Ardennes Classic. So I will be watching out for Rui Costa. And of course, his teammate Diego Ulissi has been up there in both Amstel and Flesh Wallone. So that gives Lamprey a nice 1-2 punch for this finish. A couple of outsiders. Enrico Gasparotto was very strong at La Flèche Wallonne. I was surprised at how well he finished on the Mur de Huy. I didn't think that climb was going to suit him as well as Amstel, but he was right up there in the top 10 and appears to be going very strong right now. So can't count him out after winning Amstel. A couple of other names to maybe keep in mind. I'm thinking about AG2R with Domenico Pozzovivo and Roman Bardet. Bardet in particular has done well in their past, and I think he takes his race seriously. I think it's a race he wants to win. And it's a race I think he is capable of winning if he can get away far enough from the finish. And they do have a variety of options that could be on the move here. So
Jan Bakelands, not Artur Vichot, who does not ride for Aje Désert. He rides for
Jay. Is that a reference to how the race was won?
There may have been a small editing error, small misidentification. I think what actually happened was I cross-read the start list, so I was like, oh, you know, 141, and then I ended up looking at 131. I don't know. It was something like that. It was something ridiculous.
They can be confusing sometimes, those start lists. I remember when I was at the Arctic Race of Norway last year, I got pretty stoked to see Sagan, Buhani, and Costa on the start list, which was listed last name first, only to discover that it was Juraj, Rayan, and Mario that were at that race. Let's see, anybody else here that we've missed? Bauke Mollema, I think, could be in with a chance here. We did say Chris Froome is going to be at the race. Richie Porte as well. I wonder, though, if he's going to be really doing much for BMC. I think Samuel Sanchez may be the guy to watch on BMC at this race. Also, Warren Barguil is a name I think we should keep an eye on. He was up there at Flesh Wallonne and hasn't done a whole lot in the one-day races in his career, but never know. With a climber like that, you can't count him out.
He was near the front. He was in the with the leaders at Amstel. I mean, it's not obviously not a great finish for him, but it's also worth noting that there are a surprisingly large number of Americans at this race, which is cool. Like, during the Lance bubble, there were a lot of Americans who just nobody cared. It was all about the tour, you know? And to see all these guys at a one-day race is kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at Trek's got Kiel Reinen, Peter Stettner, Jayne Alpesson with Caleb Fairley, and Chad Haga. Cannondale, the American Cannondale team, has obviously a lot of American riders. Craddock, Howells, King, Brown, and Joey Roskopf is here for BMC. Alexi Vermeulen, Larry Warbass for Yam Cycling. That's way more Americans than you usually see in a World Tour European race.
Especially in a one day, man.
Yeah,
it's
pretty surprising.
I'm excited.
There's no TJ and no Andrew Talansky and no Taylor Finney. And the fact that there are that many Americans when those three guys aren't on the start list is kind of impressive. So maybe, it doesn't seem that likely because I don't think any of them are in there among the top favorites, but maybe we'll see at least a couple of Americans there at the finish in awe. All right, that's a pretty comprehensive look at the start list. We've even talked about the Americans, which means we've gotten pretty deep into the start list. how do you feel about predictions?
Not good. Honestly, I look at it and I see Valverde and everyone else. But again, like when Dan Martin won this race, it was not expected. When Simon Gerrans won this race, it wasn't expected. Like this, it's been cool to see these guys, these not entirely predictable winners win the race after it used to be the same guy winning all three or two out of the three of Amstel, Flesch, and Liège year after year after year, and then usually test positive for drugs. I'm having a hard time not picking Valverde. I mean, he's too good. I shouldn't say he's too good. This is the sort of racing he should have probably been good at his whole career. And, you know, he kind of got sidetracked into pretending to be a Grand Tour winner. And I mean, he has won Grand Tours, but this is clearly what he's better at. Yes, he has won a Grand Tour. this is clearly where his natural strengths lie. And he's got a great team. I don't know, second and third? Yeah, Rui Costa, maybe? He was very close to... if I remember the finale last year, there was some little swivel or swerve in the sprint where if he had gone one way versus another, he might have been able to challenge Valverde. Like I said, I like the guy. I predicted him to win Amstel. It did not happen, but he was there. He just, you know, was not a factor in the sprint.
I think Ulissi was their guy in that sprint, so I don't think we really got a chance to see Costa doing as much as he could at Amstel, so really, who knows?
And third place, he's going to be another one of those guys that's in the sprint every time. I don't know. God, I'm going to do it. I'm totally going to do it. I'm going with Pirito, Joaquin Rodriguez.
Another podium finish for Pirito. Man, he's never going to come on this show.
It's true.
I'm also seeing Alejandro as the favorite here. Hard not to pick Valverde, going for a fourth win. He looks so strong in Flesch, and his team looks so strong. Everything you said. I mean, there's just so many reasons to like Alejandro Valverde for this race. I'll put Dan Martin on the podium because I really think he looks very strong right now as well. And with Julian Alaphilippe, I think Edix can play this pretty aggressively. I think they have to play it aggressively because if you don't play it aggressively, it's just going to come down to a sprint, and Alejandro Valverde is probably going to win.
Now, if anything, after Amstel, where everyone kind of sat back, and after Valverde did his thing like he always does at Flesch Wallonne, like every team in the race should know that the sitting on and waiting for the sprint, unless maybe you're Orica Green Edge, is just not an option.
Yeah, they really should follow the Tim Wellens guidebook to Ardennes cycling, and maybe one of them will pull off a win.
Cycling would be so much better with like four different Tim Wellenses. Every race. We only have the one.
That's right. Well, speaking of aggressive riders, I'm going to put Nibali on the podium as well. I think he does have that similar approach. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him win if he plays his cards right, attacks at the right time. But I just think it's going to be really hard for anybody to beat Valverde. And I kind of see Martin and Nibali, you know, launching their attacks and Valverde just kind of hopping in the wheels and waiting until the finish to outsprint everybody, as he has done so many times in the past. So that's our podium predictions. Do you have any closing thoughts?
As much as I loved the old course and thought it was a good finish, I'm curious to see what happens here. Like I said, I don't think the new climb is going to break everything up. It's cool that it's cobbled, sort of, but it's not, you look at it and it's not, you know, the Mervyn Guard's bargain. It's not a photogenic climb that's going to work its way into the fabric of the event. But yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. It's a little, I don't feel like I can tick off the landmarks in the finale. And when the riders can't do that, that kind of adds a little uncertainty to the race, which actually generally tends to lead to more sprints. But still, it'll be cool to see what happens.
And we will see what happens on Sunday, so stay tuned. We'll be back pretty soon for the Tour de Romandie, very soon for the Tour de Romandie, so keep an eye out for that. And then the Giro d'Italia to follow. We're getting into that part of the season. It's all about the stage racing. But first, Liège-Bastogne-Liège. So enjoy the race. Hope you've enjoyed the show. This has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.